This is channel 2 over. This is channel 2 over, and this is Saturday, the 6th of September, 6-9. This is channel 2 over. This is channel 2 over. And Saturday, the 6th of September, 6-9. This morning, we went out and mowed in the West Bank, mostly that old dog fennel, beautiful, handsome stuff. Faye Hunk was on the tractor with me. Then I thought I'd better come in and get that old dead grass. It's been on the ground there 2 or 3 weeks in the big early first flats pasture. And I expect all of Cookie's over. Of course, they never get over on Saturday morning. And they haven't got here Saturday afternoon. This is the end of the afternoon. Hunk's gone to the store. Laura called a few minutes ago and said, was it raining over here? It was pouring over there. Oh, there's nothing urgent. I put the teeth in the fingers in the mower. Still doesn't work right. And in the rake, it still doesn't work very well. I haven't put that link in the chain yet in the baler. But the chief's saying now is to get that old dead grass up. I've got it in rows, a half dozen rows. And we either bale it or use a pitchfork.
The night and get up in the morning and pick blueberries for breakfast. It was such fun. It really was. I was saying how we went through Scandinavia. We camped. We met a boy who had a VW camper bus. You know, he bought it in Germany and he'd been driving it all over Europe. And we met him in Amsterdam and went with 6 other people in this van. We went to Denmark and Stockholm and Oslo, to Copenhagen, Stockholm and Oslo, and driving the whole way. And then we spent about a week and a half going through the fjord country in Norway, which is just beautiful. Oh, I just love Norway. It's such a wonderful, wonderful country. It's like a small town, sort of. I mean, Oslo, you don't get the feeling that it's a city at all. It's just like a small town. And I just love that about it.
Uh-huh. It is a city.
It's a city, but it's not very big at all. And you can walk all over the whole downtown. And in the summertime, I guess, since they have such terrible winters in the summertime, everybody just sort of sits out in parks all the time, you know. And they stop work at about 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon and just sort of sit around. And it's beautiful weather, and it stays light until about 9:30 at night. And it's just... Oh, I just loved it. I didn't get quite the same feeling for Sweden that I did for Norway. And it could have been that we were just in the city. We were in Stockholm, which is a beautiful, beautiful city. It's got some old parts that are, you know, little tiny winding streets. It's all built on islands, so you're never far from water at all. And it's just beautiful. And the thing that sort of symbolized Stockholm to me was that the subway stations had just been built, I guess, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, but when they built them, they got young artists to decorate the walls, you know, so that there's no advertising or anything like that. There's mosaics and frescoes and paintings on the walls, and they're just beautiful. I mean, the subway stations are just gorgeous. They're very starkly modern, you know. They've got, like, the seats of pressed cement that are sort of shaped like that for you to sit and wait for the trains, and yeah, I was just so impressed. I love really modern things anyway. You know, the shapes and things like that are just beautiful. We were at the camping ground that we stayed at in Stockholm was sort of about 30 minutes out from town, and it was in a kind of new model city. It was near that, and they had apartment buildings and a whole little shopping complex, you know, out from the city. And, you know, it's very, very nice, but I just didn't get quite the warmth feeling for Stockholm. It's a much more sophisticated city, you know, and you don't have that small town feeling that you have in Oslo, which is, you know, I liked much, much more.
Well, now, in the camper, did you stay at youth hostels?
Well, we stayed in a youth hostel in Copenhagen, mm-hmm. because there wasn't a camping ground nearby, but there weren't any hostels in Stockholm for us to stay in,
yeah,
so we all just stayed in the van.
Yeah.
We stayed at a camping ground out. And then in Oslo, we all stayed in hotels. They had one hostel there. We couldn't get rooms, so we stayed in hotels, which are sort of like a pension place, you know.
But on the road, did you?
On the road, we just camped.
Oh,
we all got sleeping bags. I got a sleeping bag in Denmark, and it was so funny. I don't know, the Scandinavians just must be tall or something, but I'd get in the sleeping bag, and there'd be about this much above my head. It was so long. It was about 7 feet long. But it was great because it kept me so warm, and it was really cold. You know, it, especially in Norway, the couple of nights, I thought we were just going to all freeze to death before morning. Oh, I felt like I got gypped out of summer this year because it was so cold all summer.
Everybody
until
was.
August. August was beautiful in England when we went back. It was, well, we were in Scotland for the first 2 weeks, and that was, you know, sort of just nice weather. And then when we went back to London, the last part of August, the weather was just gorgeous. It was sunny every day, and it would rain once a day, but then it would clear up, and it was just beautiful. We felt so lucky because in June it rained all the time. I just never believed rain could be like that. People told me it rained in England, and I didn't believe it. And it would, one day it just rained, just a steady wall of rain all day long.
You got where you just ignored it, didn't
you? Oh, yeah.
You?
Well, I went out and bought an umbrella. That's what I did. I'd had my raincoat re-waterproofed, and the first day I wore it in the rain, it got absolutely soaked. It just doesn't do any good to have your coats redone like that. So I went and got an umbrella, and I carried it. I wasn't going to let, you know, pride stand in my way or anything. I carried it on my shoulder everywhere. And I stayed dry, too.
Umbrella's better than a raincoat in the summertime. A raincoat, you get so hot.
Yeah, that's true. Well, of course, I thought it was sort of chilly, too, in June, especially up in Windermere and in the Lake District. It got pretty chilly. We bought big sweaters and everything to prepare ourselves. Mother told me it was cold there, and I didn't believe her.
Hard to believe her.
I know. I'm so used to Florida in the summer that I just don't, you know, I think, oh, well, you know, it couldn't be that cold, but it's really pretty chilly there all summer. I was comfortable in sweaters and stuff.
Humid.
No, it's just, it's cold sort of rain, you know, so it's not hard to take. It just rains a lot.
Tell again about Barbara.
Fine. She's at Windmill Hill Riding Academy near Stratford, which she said is, there's the riding school where Princess Anne rides, and there's another one, and then Windmill Hill are sort of the three riding schools in England. So it's a very, very reputable place. The owner is very well known in dressage riding, you know. And they have students all year, but she's taking like a year's course to get certified by the British Riding Association, and she's going to take her exams this month. She takes a written exam, and then examiners come down and watch her ride too, and then she gets certified. And it's not, even after this whole year, it's not as a stable manager, it's as an assistant stable manager, you know, saying that you're worthy of you know, being a helper but not running a stable. It's so funny. The British are so proper about everything. And, you know, they're so serious about their riding. My goodness, they really are. It was quite an experience for me, you know. And, but anyway, she said that over in America, that this certification is just worth, you know, three times what it is in England, that we'll be able to just get all sorts of really good jobs in riding over here, having this certification from England, because it's so stringent what they have to go through. And she lives there, and there are about five students, I guess, that have been there all year taking this course. And then during the summer, they get a lot more students that just come for, say, a month or something and board and ride and then leave. And then they have people all year, of course, taking lessons. But these students that are there all year are sort of the stable hands, too. They sort of run the place and take care of the horses and all that kind of stuff. It works both ways. They get their lessons, and they're the ones that take care of the horses and do all that. They have, I don't know how many horses they had. I guess about 30, maybe.
And Barbara
25
teaches,
or 30.
Too.
She teaches, too, yeah. She, I think she had a whole class that she taught regularly every time, but they have such a variety of people taking lessons, too. You know, it's not just kids, but adults from all around come, too, for private lessons and that kind of thing.
And this is all inside.
It's all inside, too, yes. They don't ride outside at all, except for hunting. I mean, none of the classes are held outside. They do all the jumping and everything inside. They have a big covered arena that's, I guess maybe it's about half the size of a football field. It's pretty big and covered, and that's, you know, thick dirt. The dirt, when you walk on it, you sort of sink down into it, because I guess they keep it pretty well filled up and raked and everything like that.
And Barbara has some real grooming to do, too.
Yeah, she has like 4 or 5 horses that are hers to take care of, and she said you have to practically give them a personal bath every morning. She was telling us what they had to do in the wintertime when it's so cold, you know,
yes,
and
right.
Keeping them blanketed up. But they don't heat the barns, because then they'd catch cold when they go outside. They just have to keep them blanketed. But they have about 3 different kinds of blankets that they put on them, you know, for different times of the day. And she said they really do practically give them baths every day, the horses. You know, they have to hose them down and wash their feet and oil their feet and clip their ears and, you know, everything every day. They have nice horses. They're really, really
they are
nice. Yeah. Well, they're, you know, they use them for all kinds of riding. They're for their beginners and everything. She was saying, we saw a class. We went out one evening and saw a class of the students, Barbara and all the other students that were there. And she said that all the horses that they were riding, they used for the beginners too, you know, so that it's kind of interesting. You know, it just depends on the rider what the horse will do.
Oh,
completely.
Yeah.
Completely. Because they were jumping and everything, you know, with these horses, and you know, they'd still use them for all the small children that would come out to ride too.
Well, now that's nice, you see, what all this work you've done with the horses, that opens up what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just, I learned so much just watching them ride. It was amazing. I really would have liked to have gone back and had a lesson. Barbara said, you know, in August, why didn't we come back and have a lesson? And it just didn't work out for us to get back out to Stratford. But I was all set to go for the whole month of August.
Just stay out there.
And just stay. And, you know, I imagine it was probably too late then for me to have gotten a place, you know, to stay there. Or I'm sure they were filled up. She said that a lot of kids come over from France and Germany and places like that to ride there in the summer.
And Debbie said that this place was on one of those little knolls, high knolls, out from about 15 minutes out from Stratford. And
you could see so far. We went out the next day when we were there. We spent the morning looking around in Stratford, and then we went out in the afternoon after lunch, and Barbara took us over the cross-country course and up on the hill, and you could just, oh, it's so beautiful, you know, sheep all over the place. Great. And showed us the cross-country course, and oh, my goodness. I don't know if I'd ever have the courage to do something like that. Boy, some of the jumps they do are just deadly looking. You know, they go over a hedge, and then there's a 6-foot drop, and then there's another jump over here, and something in a pool beyond that, and the horse has got to, you know, go over them all at the same time. Oh, gee. She said that sometimes the simplest looking things are the ones that the horses, you know, the ones that look like they'd just be terrible, the horses have no trouble with, and then the simplest thing, you know, just one jump with a drop after it or something, they'll fall or something doing. I don't know. The inside jumping appealed to me a great deal more. Maybe it's just that I've never done any jumping, you know, and if I did inside, then maybe I'd feel up to going outside.
I think
for
so,
it.
Too. Yes. If I jumped, I'd want to know where.
I'd want to know where I was going, yeah. Not go jumping into some pool or something.
A 6-foot drop on the other side of a hedge.
Gee. And the solid brick walls and everything, you know?
Yeah, that you wouldn't knock down if you hit.
You wouldn't knock down. You just go, see the end of you and the horse too. You ran into it.
Well, I guess the English have its famous riding skills. I guess the French do too, of course. But the English really take their riding seriously.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I guess they rank pretty highly all over the world, and they're riding. They take animals very seriously too. They have a very strict SPCA, and like they don't clip dogs' ears. They can't clip dogs' ears.
Oh.
And you see all these boxers and terriers with floppy ears. It's real funny.
Real good for them.
Yeah. And they let them dock their tails because the boxers have dock tails, but they don't let them clip their ears. Any kind of dog.
That's fine.
Yes, I think I would have been tempted to go back and spend some time just because it was something that, you know, you wouldn't find in this country.
Oh,
I know you. Well, I'm glad you got together.
Oh,
I know Barbara was pleased, and her mother said she was so pleased to meet you and have you. Yeah.
It's always fun to go somewhere and know somebody. That's such fun.
Yeah, I think that's nice.
Yeah.
Then you don't.
David said she laughed at herself. She walked all over you. Everywhere she went, she walked 5 miles a day or six, whatever it was, and up at Durham. She couldn't walk 3 blocks. She had to get in the car and ride.
I just laughed at myself all week because I stayed at a little motel that was it would have been about a 10-minute walk maybe from Soonbuck's house. And I drive all the time. And it was just so silly. Because I'd walked for miles in Europe and thought nothing of it. Once we got in shape, we went through a couple of weeks, you know, where our whole legs would just ache after we'd walked so much. But then it was just nothing, you know, and if we didn't walk 6 miles every day, we wondered what was wrong with us. Something was wrong. We really felt like we walked all over Europe. I suppose I was saying that when we were up in the Lake District, it would have been nice to have had a car because it's hard to get around on buses and stuff. But I guess we covered more ground maybe walking. We had to walk everywhere. We walked from Windermere down to Bowness and back, which is a mile downhill and a mile back uphill every day. That's the clocking, you know. So that was 2 miles just to go down to the lake. And we went pony trekking out there. And the day we got there, we heard about a hotel that had pony trekking, and we thought, well, we'll go out and see about, you know, whether we can go and everything. And so we walked. Well, it was about 4 miles out of town. And we got out there, and they said, oh, this is the first season we haven't had pony trekking. We discontinued it this season. And so we walked all the way back, and, 6 miles. If we'd thought to use the telephone, we would have had to walk 6 miles. But
it was fun.
But it was fun anyway. Yeah. And we did go, finally. We found another place to go, and we went riding one day. That was fun, too. It was sort of the other kind of horse than all these horses that they had at where Barbara was, these, you know, very manicured animals. You know, these ponies that they had were just wonderful. And they'd rocks, there'd be just huge rocks in the paths, you know, and these horses would just go clomping over them, you know, like it was just nothing. I thought of Missy. What'd she do if she saw those rocks? Or she saw we'd go clomping through little rivers and, you know, all over, and there'd be sheep around, and these ponies were just completely unconcerned. You know, we rode on the highway too. Horses have the right of way on the highway. They can ride on the highways, and so we rode down the highway for about a couple miles to get back to the barn. And I thought, my goodness, what would Miss Missy do out here with all these sheep and rocks and all these strange things and new grass to eat?
You just have to look at every one of them.
New grass to eat. Fun.
Pony tracking. How big were your ponies?
Well, they were pretty big.
They're
No. They were smallish horses. They just called them ponies. That's just sort of, it was so cute. There was one little girl that rode with us. It was just Pat and I, and this little girl and her father came up just as we were getting ready to leave with our guide. And this little girl had never ridden a horse before, but she wanted to try. And she was so good. I was so proud of her because she was about 10, I guess. And her father, I don't know whether he'd ever ridden before either, but he wasn't too concerned about riding these horses. But this little girl was on a pony that just ran away every time we'd cross a stream. You know, her pony would just take off, and she was so good. She never got scared or anything, you know. And the pony would usually stop, and she stayed on the whole time. And we got to one point, we were going through a farmyard, and they had just put down some new cement. And so the lady came out and said, "Could you go through the pasture instead? Because we don't want horse prints in our new cement." And so our guide said, "Oh, sure." So we went through the farm. The minute this little girl's pony saw this open field, you know, pow, he just took off running. And the only thing she said, she just said, "Daddy!" And this pony going 90 miles an hour across the field, you know. I was really proud of her that she stayed on and, you know, didn't go screaming around, you know. I thought she deserved a gold medal when she got, I don't know if she'll ever ride again. But I thought she deserved something.
You just went just on a trip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't. We just went on a about 2 hours, I guess, out riding around. We didn't went up sort of up one side of a mountain, back down the other side, but through a couple of farms and sheep fields. You know, every time we turned around, there was a blatting sheep. Oh, that's funny. They're all marked. They mark them with paint or something, or dye. They dye their backs, and so some of them have big green splotches, and some of them have big blue splotches, and red and yellow, and some of them are X's and crosses, and because they get through all the fences and they just wander all around, all over, and so they have to have some way of. I guess it's easier to throw dye on their back than tag their ears or something like that.
And you can see it.
And you could see it. Right.
So they're just out on the.
They're just out on the moors, sort of.
What are the fences like?
The fences. They have a lot of walls, stone walls,
yeah.
And then just wooden fences mostly. But the sheep just go right through them, and some wire, I guess. Mostly where we were riding was mostly stone walls,
yeah.
And in a lot of places they'd have fallen down, and the sheep could just walk right over them, or they'd just walk over them anyway. They're so agile. And in Scandinavia, they had sheep with long tails. Their tails were about this long. In Norway, I'd never seen sheep like that before. Really strange. I was telling this Miles too about the cows. And have you ever heard about the Highland cattle in Scotland?
No.
They've got long horns and they're short. They're kind of like dwarf cattle. They've got short legs and they're long hair. They're real shaggy looking and these funny little eyes and these long horns out like this. They're such funny looking little animals. I got the biggest kick out of them. Just short leg, long haired, long horn cows. And they're really cute.
Sounds like
an old time, yeah. I think they are. I think they've been there for quite a while. And they aren't everywhere in Scotland. They just, you know, it was usually quite an occasion if you saw a herd of them because they have other kinds of cows, too.
Yeah.
The cows were different everywhere we went. I noticed the cows. In every country, they'd be different.
That's because you knew the ranch.
I knew the ranch. And they'd be different everywhere, different colors and just look generally different.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether they were related breeds or not. But
you know, I never had an opportunity to look at things like that. For some reason, I don't know why. I guess I put all my time on monuments.
Well, we saw a lot of monuments, too, in books and a lot of art galleries and stuff. But we saw a lot of country, too, because we were driving a lot.
If I were doing it again, I think I'd look at the animals.
Look at the animals. Well, I always see the animals everywhere, all the cats and the dogs, but the dogs don't have clipped ears. Oh, there was a wonderful cat that lived near us in London. He was just huge. He was a big, fat cat, and he'd always be sleeping out on the doorstep just about the time we'd be going to dinner, and we'd walk by and talk to him every night. His name was Rusty. We met his mother and daddy one night and talked to them for a while. His name was Rusty. And so every night we'd have to talk to Rusty. He's cute. He was the fattest cat I think I've ever seen. He was just like this, and he'd sit like this, you know, this big fat cat. Well,
did you stay in the same place when you came back to London?
Mm-hmm.
No. Oh, you did.
We did. Yeah, we were very lucky to have places. I don't know if you read about the hotel shortage in London, but it's really quite serious in August. They just had no place for anybody.
Yeah.
They'd never had so many tourists as they did. And we made reservations in about February for June. And so we had a beautiful room in June. I think we had one of the nicest rooms in the hotel just because we made our reservations so early. And we decided that we'd come back to London. And so I went down, I guess it was about the third week in June, to make reservations for the last 2 weeks in August. And I said, you know, I hope you can take us. And I didn't really think he'd say no, you know. I couldn't imagine that he'd be full, but he said, well, you know, I think I can. And he opened his book, and I was sort of looking at it, and there were about two blank places. And this was for the end of August. Ah, we were, you know, we were stuck way up on the third floor in this little tiny back room, but we were so glad to have it because people just couldn't get places.
Was it a hotel or a car?
Yes, it's
a
on
real hotel.
Yeah, it was on Montague Street, right next to the British Museum.
Yeah.
the Lonsdale Hotel, just right around the corner. And it was just a lovely little, we just had a good time there, you know. Little silver services for breakfast every morning, you know, and linen napkins. No, boy, it was.
See, I should have been there.
It was really nice.
But it wasn't a deluxe.
Oh, no.
It was just a little place.
No, it was it was small.
Oh, that's what I was thinking, because I just wanted, whenever I get back, I'll remember it.
It's a very, very nice place. It's two old townhouses that they've converted into a hotel, and it belongs to the Duke of Bedford. It's by Bedford Square, and it belongs to the Duke of Bedford, but Mr. Gordon runs it for him. And he's just a very nice man. He just took really good care of us. He was sort of our father. I think he didn't think we were big enough to be out by ourselves or something. One day we were starting out, and Pat had a string hanging out of the back of her coat, and Mr. Gordon was in the hall as we were leaving, and we said, you know, goodbye, and we started out the door, and he came running after us, and he said, got a string hanging out of the back of your coat, you know. And Pat said, oh, well, you know, that's too bad. I'll just break it off. And so he tried to yank it out, and he couldn't because it was about three strings, and he couldn't break it. And so Pat said, oh, well, you know, we'll cut it off tonight. And he said, oh, no, you know, we couldn't go around London with this string hanging out of the back of her coat. And he went running back into his office and got scissors and came out in the middle of the street and cut the string off. We just thought it was so cute, you know, that he took such good care of us. We were just a joke, too, at breakfast, because we were usually about the last people to come down. They served until 9:30, and we'd usually come down about 9:15. And we ate so much. We were just always sending back for more toast and more jam and everything. You know, we just thought English breakfasts were great, and we just, you know, really gobble.
Carry you through the day.
We'd never get hungry till, you know, dinner time, because we'd eat so much for breakfast. And one morning, Mr. Gordon, well, he'd wait on the table sometimes when it was rushed, you know, and he was waiting on us that particular morning, and I think he was just a little amazed at how much food we were eating. And he finally brought our second order of toast, and he said, would you like another breakfast? And we said, oh, no, I think the toast is fine. And after that, we used to make jokes. You know, we'd come to breakfast, and we'd say, you know, they'll go back and give our orders and say, those two American girls are out there, and they want 10 orders of toast and 16 eggs.
Well, I think so, too. I just delighted in those.
Oh, they have, like...
Even Faye allows those English breakfasts.
Oh, I four-course breakfast, you know, fruit and cereal.
Always
different.
I would just go to England for breakfast. And, you know, I don't care for breakfast.
Yeah, well, I've always enjoyed breakfast, you know, and I wanted something to eat, but I've never really been much for, you know, a huge breakfast like this, but we just... You know, in Scotland, too, we had wonder that we stayed with it. In a bed and breakfast place in Edinburgh, and we had. Have you ever had black pudding? It's sort of a sausage type thing that's black, and I just loved it. It was like liver sausage sort of, and we'd have that, big chunks of it, and potatoes, and sausage, and bacon, and eggs, and cereal, and fruit, and tea, and toast. I mean, this is more than I'd eat for dinner, for breakfast. We'd hardly be able to move for about 2 hours after we'd get through eating.
Yeah.
You didn't need much lunch.
No, no. And then by the time you were getting hungry again, it was tea time. And so you'd have tea. I got really into the tea habit, too.
You just do that, and you miss it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you miss it.
Well, I never really liked tea until this summer. You know, I never had it much and never really liked it. Oh, it's so good, too. Yeah, I really liked it. And, of course, the tea is better than coffee you get anywhere in England.
Yeah.
Other than breakfast, English food doesn't have too much to recommend it. Coffee and tea are their big, you know, their big attractions.
Well, you didn't care too much, just so you kept together and had a good.
Oh yes, we laughed about it. We and every time we'd find a good English restaurant, we'd pin a star on it. London is a wonderful place for eating. Other, you know, they have a lot of really inexpensive foreign restaurants that are where all seem to be right around where we were living. Chinese and Indian and French and Greek and Spanish and Italian and we just, you know, we could just sort of pick our nationalities for the night. You know, what we wanted for dinner. It was great, just marvelous. We ate Chinese food an awful lot. It was so funny. The English put fried eggs on everything. You know, when you get a mixed grill or something in a restaurant, there's always a fried egg right on top. They just have this thing about fried eggs, not just for breakfast, but all the time. And we had a Chinese dinner one night in London, and I ordered the special chow mein. You know, it's our specialty, and it came in with a fried egg on top. And I thought, isn't this just typically British? You know, here's Chinese food a la Britain. You know, with a fried egg right on top of the chicken chow mein.
Damn it.
I never realized that.
We just use it, you know, when we get hungry, we go get fish and chips.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The fish and chips are good too.
And wrap it up in a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Take it
on the corner.
Take it with you. And the ice cream stands too, all over were good. I doubt the ice cream in Scandinavia was marvelous. They had sort of, it was almost like whipped cream. They called it soft ice. And we were cooking out when we were camping, and so we never had any dessert or anything, and every time we'd see an ice cream stand, we'd stop, you know, ice cream, and everybody'd pile out and go get ice cream. That was our dessert, no matter what time of the day. You know, we could have just had breakfast, and we'd have ice cream if there was an ice cream stand.
Well, this is real smart, the boy, to get
himself a... Oh, he was awfully nice. He'd just gotten his, he's from San Francisco, and he'd just gotten his master's. And it's in March, I guess he was at a school that was on the trimester, and he'd finished his master's and just took off for Europe and got this car and had been all over. He'd been there for 4 months and had been from Turkey all the way back to Scandinavia, and he'd come to Scandinavia at the end because he was going to fly back from Berlin. And so we sort of met up with him just as he was starting to go all through Scandinavia. So it just worked out perfectly for us because we wanted to go where he was going too, and so we just...
He would just fill his camper bus up
with whoever wanted to go. I mean, you know, he'd just take people from city to city even. And then we'd all split gas costs and we'd all, you know, cook out. He had a little stove, and so we'd cook and then sleep out, camp out.
Hmm.
It was fun. It was six people were kind of a lot for the van. We decided after we left that it would really be ideal to have, you know, maybe one less because they're not real big. And we were all seemed to be sort of tall. We were always bumping elbows into each other, you know, when we were trying to fix dinner. We'd say, well, now, you sit still. Don't move. You know, don't move your feet or you'll kick the stove. Don't move your elbow or you'll elbow somebody in the eye. But it was a lot of fun. It really was. Yeah. Well, I'd never done, you know, too much camping for an extended period of time before, so it was kind of fun. I'd camped out a lot going to camp when I was younger, but had never, you know, traveled camping before.
Well, you were really just knocking around, weren't you?
Well, we just Scandinavian England. We didn't, we drove.
That's what I mean.
You know,
we just knocked around.
Yeah, we just sort of went where we wanted to. You know, it was very nice. We didn't, we felt like sleeping all afternoon. We'd sleep all afternoon.
And your reservations were just for beginning and the end in
mm-hmm.
London?
We had reservations for 2 weeks in London when we went. And then we decided that we'd come back to London at the end of the summer because we loved it so much after 2 weeks, and we just thought, you know, we'd like to come back and stay. And we had to fly out of there anyway, so we were going to make reservations for the last couple of nights anyway before our flight. And we just decided to stay 2 weeks, and so we made the reservations in June, which is a really good thing because we never would have gotten a place to stay if we'd just arrived. But we, other than that, we had no trouble getting places. You know, like in, we made no reservations. Well, in England especially, you can just stay bed and breakfast places everywhere, and there's always room for you.
And they're so
nice, and it's just like you're staying in their home, you know, and you just feel like you're imposing on them.
We used to have something like that, you see, in the tourist homes.
That's right.
But you see, that's gone completely.
Oh, like,
and,
yeah.
And I almost quit traveling when they went out. I don't go to hotels. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But the old tourist homes, I got acquainted with a lot of people.
They were nice.
Yeah. It's just like staying in family. Well, in Edinburgh especially, the woman was just so dear to us. I mean, you know, she'd hung all our washing up for us and let us wash, you know, and in the bathroom, and then she'd put it out on the line and she'd run out and get it if it was going to rain or something. Just so dear. And in Windermere too, we stayed a week, and the woman that we stayed with there was awfully nice too. It was that was the week of the investiture and all the Wimbledon tennis. And so almost every night we'd watch television because there'd be either, you know, something about the royal family or there'd be the Wimbledon tennis, which we'd watch every night. And it was just wonderful. She'd bring down big trays of cookies and tea every night about 9 o'clock, you know, and then it was, we'd be down there, and there was another couple staying there, and then Mr. and Mrs. Monroe, who owned the house, you know, so it was just like a family. It wasn't like they were serving us, you know, and then leaving, but they were watching television, too, you know, and we'd just sort of have a party every night. And it was just wonderful. And when every place else we stayed, they're so good in Europe. I mean, they're so geared to tourists, I guess, that they have tourist boards and bureaus in every town that you go to, and you can just go and say, you know, well, we need a room for two, and they have all the listings of all the hotels, and you tell them, you know, what kind of accommodation you want, like you want to stay in a student hostel or you want to stay in a, you know, a, what gradation of hotel, and they have all the listings, and they know who's full and who's not, and they just call and make your reservations for you, you know, right then.
You don't have to go to the police station, right, Gabby?
When did you go to the police station?
Oh, I don't remember. Trying to find, you know, I mean, there was nothing even, you know, this helped, because you don't have to go to...
Well, it just really makes such sense, you know, to do.
I was going to ask you, how did you find these places?
The hostels?
Uh-huh. And that, of course, I know you how you find the hostels, but I mean, just the private homes.
Well, the private, the bed and breakfast places, we'd just walk around, and they'd have signs out and just go, if they had a vacancy sign, we'd just knock on the door and say, do you have room for us? And it's so nice, like in Stratford. Well, in Stratford, we decided that since it was sort of a tourist-oriented town, you know, that maybe we'd have trouble finding a place if we just arrived. And so we called from London, an address that we had in one of our guidebooks, and said, you know, could you keep us tonight and tomorrow night? And she said, well, we can keep you tonight, but I can't keep you tomorrow night, but I'll find you a place, don't worry. And so we arrived, and we stayed there that night, and then we went next door the next night. You know, she called up and found out for us. Just, oh, so nice.
And it's nice to be able to use the language.
Yes, that was a help, too, of course. So a lot of things in the Scandinavian languages are very similar. Like, we got very proficient in food names because we go into stores to be buying our dinner or something into grocery stores, and like bread is B-R-O-D with a line through the O, and milk is M-E-L-K instead of I, and things like that were very similar, but the language itself, I mean, you know, speaking, I have a lot of trouble. But in Scandinavia, English is the second language in the schools, and so if you ever, even way out in the boonies, if you found a child under 10 or under 15 or something, they'd speak beautiful English.
Yeah.
Even if their parents didn't speak English, the children would.
Yeah,
because
amazing.
They learned it in school.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And just way out in the country.
Yeah.
You know, we'd be out in the middle of nowhere, and these kids would be on the, you know, by the side of the road speaking beautiful English.
That's
amazing.
They learn it in the school. Learn something in school.
Yeah, learn something in the school. Norway was just so nice. Even you just never felt like you were out of sight of people. I mean, in the rural areas, there were farms and everything, but they were never so far away that you felt isolated. I mean, you felt like you were on your own farm, but there were always people nearby, which was really nice. That sort of added to the small town flavor that I had from Oslo. You know, that the whole country was sort of like a small town, and everybody was everybody's neighbor, sort of thing. I really liked it. I'd love to live in Norway for a while.
You said this was a sort of extreme of Greece.
Mm. Yes, I thought it just sort of a psychic extreme, you know, the south and the north, opposites between Norway and Greece. I really felt the whole time I was there, I thought of Greece. Just the contrast between the dark and light people, and that, you know, that everybody in Greece is swarthy and dark and sort of short, and in Scandinavia they're tall and blonde, and just really a psychic thing for me the whole time. It was really, really strange that I felt this so strongly the whole time I was there.
And green.
Oh, yeah. The water is so beautiful. It's like mint colored, and it's clear and just like ice. We were going to go swimming one day in a stream, and that you put your hand in the water, and a second later it would just be numb, and the water was so cold because there's still snow on the mountains in Norway all year, and it's melting, and oh, so cold. I just couldn't even bear to put on a bathing suit, much less get in the water. I'm used to the Florida water, bath water. my friends from New Jersey can't understand how I can, you know, I spent the weekend in New Jersey with the girl that I was going with before we left, and we went down to the beach one day, and we were going to go skiing. And I put my foot in the water, this is in June, and I said, I think it's kind of cold. And she told me it was just perfect. What did I want? You know, bath water? I said, well, you know, I'm from Florida, and I think it's kind of cold.
Warm lake water.
And, well, even the ocean's warm here.
Yeah.
More so.
Well, my daddy, what are you going to do now?
Well,
I'm stay here for a while.
I'm just not real sure. The girl that I was going to room with in New York got married this summer.
Oh.
So I'm sort of without a roommate at the moment. So I'm going to go either to New York or Boston. I may go to Boston. Candy Chotis is there.
Uh-huh.
And she has called and said, you know, come up to Boston and just see how you like it and see if you want to stay. You know, we have room for you here. And so I may go up there.
Uh-huh.
Or if I can find someone to live with in New York, I may go to New York too. I'm just not. Do you have preferences between the two?
Boston or New York?
I ask everybody this. I think it'll help me make my decision. But I realize this is my decision in the end.
Since you are determined to live in a metropolitan area for a year.
Well, do you know? Can you think of any really nice smaller towns in New England that I might like? I've thought of a smaller town after, because I'm not really a metropolitan girl. I mean, I'd like the experience
of
the city, but
I can just tell you short order. I can shoot my wife. You know, in a nice little bit of city, Livingston. We got plenty of room out here, Livingston.
You need a stable hand out here. A nursemaid for Molly.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing, Jack. We were saying the other day that young people just, you know, they just had to go get jobs and things like that, and they couldn't freelance. Now, here's a girl perfectly willing to just go with the breeze, just so she has an experience, and I think it's marvelous.
Well, I thought last year that I really wanted to go to New York, and because I went up there, you know, for a week at Thanksgiving, and New York makes such an impression on you. I think it's such a sense impression, you know, all the lights, and it's so exciting, you know, and you get sort of bowled over by it. And I think I'd like New York. I think a lot of it is very abrasive these days, you know, the living there. I think there's a lot to be had there, but I think a lot of it is sort of negative, too. I've sort of gotten to feel this way over the summer thinking about it. And Boston appeals to me a lot. I think there'd be a lot more historical interest in Boston, and maybe a little quieter than New York. But then, too, I know New York would really be an experience, and maybe everybody should live a year in New York, you know, just to have lived there. I don't know. It's a...
Well, your dad should tell you. He's from New York.
Yeah, and Phoebe's lived in Boston.
Yeah.
I'll talk to both of them. But I'll be up in that area somewhere. I thought of a smaller town in New England somewhere. You know, I like New England very much. I haven't been there.
It's awful cold.
And I know, I'll freeze. My blood will turn to ice. But, you know, maybe a smaller town in New Hampshire, Vermont or something. I don't worry. I'm not even thinking about jobs.
Yeah.
I can get
a
job anywhere, you know. I don't know.
Isn't that marvelous?
My big thing is I'm trainable. They can teach me to do anything, you know, even run a computer if they want to. I've gone to college for 4 years and I'm not, you know, I don't have a profession, but they can train me to do something.
You know, if they had a good job like Mark Twain did as a tramp printer, everywhere he went, he was in demand.
Mm-hmm.
And then printing, you see, he didn't have to think about it when he went home at night. Now, you see, that's the big hazard now. Any job you get, it gets you.
Mm-hmm. And you have to think about it when you go home.
Yeah, you just can't keep clear of your job.
So get your job.
So you're not a tramp anymore.
That's the thing to strive for, just to be completely free. Yeah, well, I...
For a while.
But don't commit yourself to a year at any place, you know, just try.
Oh, well, I know. I just, you know, get a job somewhere. Well, I have one of my friends from school wrote and is in New York now, and she's working for a publishing house. I think, the name's right on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, she's got a very long title. She said she thinks it's just another name for a flunky. She said all they're having her do is proofread copy. But she says it's fun, and she said, you know, they need people. They just sort of hired her on the spot. And so I, you know, jobs don't really concern me. I'll find something.
Europe next year.
Oh, what I really would like to do is go to school in Europe. That's my latest thing.
That would be nice, but
I'd really like to, but I don't want to go back to school until I know what I want to study, or, you know. I mean, I don't want, so many kids are just in graduate school now, you know, just to be there. You know, they don't know what they want to do being there, and I think it would be a waste of time and effort and money if you're just there not to
just to be going to
graduate school. I mean, I'd want to go to be studying something, you know, be in some field somehow. And I don't know what field I'd like to be in. So.
You'll wind up in Oslo.
Oh, well, I'll go to Oslo and study Scandinavian design or something. That one of the girls we were traveling with told me I should go be a furniture designer in Scandinavia, because we go into these, they have, in all the big cities, they have design centers for things, and I just would go crazy. We'd go in these places, you know, with this wonderful, wild furniture, and they have beautiful fabrics, too, that they do, and wood. Beautiful wood. Wood is sort of the thing in Scandinavia because they have so many forests, and they build all their houses out of wood, and they do beautiful woodwork in the furniture and stuff. And I'd go into these stores and just go wild, and I'd come out, you know, saying, "Oh, wasn't that beautiful?" And she'd just laugh and say, "We just got to stay here and design furniture."
Maybe so. That's that might be it. But at least she's looking around.
Yeah, you know, I'm very. I thought.
Yes, encumbered.
I'm not encumbered by anything.
Isn't that marvelous?
It's just
and
great.
You stay unencumbered until you find your niche. Or no, maybe not look for a niche.
Mm-hmm. Look around for a niche for a while.
Just a little niche.
Just a little one. One I can cope with. I don't want one that's too big.
Just a niche.
Oh, there's just so much to be had everywhere. I mean, I don't think it really matters where you live. Do you so much?
Well, I think so, but
when he was your age, he didn't think so.
It'd be fun to stay in the South. I mean, I think I'd like to go north, but it'd be fun to stay in the South now, because this is sort of when the South is confronting its destiny, you know, and it's sort of an interesting time to be living in the South right now. Yeah, because there's so many things going on with schools and that kind of thing. I mean, I think you could get really interested in what's happening. Yeah.
You know how ever so often we try to sort of put a firecracker under Margaret? She came out and wrote a good business summer. She'd come out and she still would just scoot away, you know, with there. And I said, "Margaret, I'll be on a ride with you in a little while." First thing I know, she'd be in her car and got to leave, man, you know. Rarely ever would she come in, you know, just sort of scoot in and scoot out. And she was driving that little car, and it just about fell apart. We worried about it. So she came riding up one day with a new car, a beautiful new car. I forget what it was. And I said, "Now, I guess this will tie you down to your teaching job." She said, "Yes. For the rest of my life, I'll just be paying on this car." But it didn't seem to bother. She didn't seem to think that she ought to leave Maitland.
Is she going to stay there again?
She's at Winter Park now.
Hmm.
They changed school. She didn't change school.
Was she here all summer?
Uh-huh. She took a course in education. And, but she said no. She's perfectly happy with her teacher. And so I tease her once in a while, you know. She'd talk about you if she wanted to. Always know. Say she'll get tired of teaching down there. I you know, I said it once in a while, "You sure you don't want to go to the Peace Corps or somewhere?" "Oh no, she'd be scared to death." Oh dear. Well, you suppose we better go out and look at the horses?
I think so.
Sophia, it's going to rain.
Oh yeah. But it will.
Put on my shoes. Look at what I got. London WC
won. Yeah.
I just went crazy in that store. I went in and I got these one day, and then I took them back, and the girl that I was traveling with rides too, and she liked them so much, she went back in the next day to get some. And I told them, I sidled up to the man, and I said, see, I'm bringing some customers. They're trying to take me out to lunch. And he laughed, and he said, well, if you bring somebody else in off the street, I'll take you to dinner. And so I got Missy a brush there. They had all these things, you know, for horses. And it just smelled so good. I felt like I was in a barn or something. And all these cute little kids. Oh, every time I'd go in there, there'd be all these darling little kids in there, you know, being very terribly serious about horsey. You know, they'd all be wearing their boots, and they'd have a little dirt on them to show that they were really from the barn. You know? I got the biggest kick out of it. But I haven't even used these yet.
You know, the English were the great shoemakers.
Were they? Well, look at the soles on these things. I mean, it's just beautiful the way they've done this.
I never had a good pair of shoes such as they make.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just like iron. I mean, boy, a horse could step on you, nothing would happen. I don't know what they put in the top of them here.
Oh,
that's hard they
are. That's what they ought to have.
That's the great thing about it.
Yeah.
I really am envious.
Yes, they'll be with you a long time. And improve with age, won't they?
I've got to get some saddle soap for them.
Yes, you should do that. The very, I've got
should I put some on before I use them?
Uh-huh, I've got some right out there.
Okay,
you can just work on them.
Three, four, 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 three, four, 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 five.